Okay, we're going to start here at the top of Kuf Mem Hei Amud Aleph. Yesterday we left off with the Gemara discussing about what happens if one of the parties passes away before they're able to complete the Nisuin. I mean, that there was Kiddushin that was effective between a man and a woman. And then the man passes away, or the woman passes away prior to them able to consummate the marriage with Nisuin. So does the Kesef Kiddushin get returned or not? So the Gemara had said, Esther brought a brisa that said that when it is the woman who passes away, it's subject to minhag, minhag makom. If the minhag makom is to return the kesef kedushin, then they do. If the minhag makom is not to return it, then they don't return it. Whereas when it comes to the man passing away, the man passes away, then the woman certainly does not have to return the kesef kedushin, because she can suggest or say, I'm ready to get married. Give me my husband. I'm ready to go forward the marriage. It's not from my side that this marriage is not being completed. And therefore, I'm not obligated to return the monies. And we apply that or that same logic to the case of the Shush Binin. So now, four lines down on the top of Kuf Mem Aleph, the Gemara says, Lema tnuli bali vesmachimo tanahi. Let us say that ability or that principle that the woman can say, I'm ready to go through with the marriage, just my husband's not around, and therefore I can keep the money. Let's say that's subject to a machloket tanaim. Tanya, we have a braisa. Amareis et aisha, someone who became engaged, we'll use that term loosely, engaged here means kiddushin. Bitula gova matayim, v'almana'a mane. A bitula, obviously this is a first marriage for the woman, her ketubah is 200 zuz, and if for whatever reason the marriage is terminated, she'll get her ketubah of 200, and almanah gets a manet. Makom shenagul achzir kiddushin machzirim, in the places that they normally return the kiddushim, they return it. Makom shenagul shelo achzir kiddushin ein machzirin, and a place where they don't have the minhag to return it, they do not. Divrei Rabbi Natan, that's the position of Rabbi Natan. Obviously, the brisa is somewhat cryptic, and the Gemara will explain each part of the brisa. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi Omer, Be'emet Amru, Makom Shenagul Achzir Machzirin, Makom Shenagul Shelo Achzir Ein Machzirin. It's all subject to the Minhag. So the Gemara asks the obvious question, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, Hainu Tanakamo. Yehuda Nasi and the Rabbi Natan are saying the identical thing. They both mentioned that it's a Minhag. So what's the difference between them? El Alav, so the Gemara suggests, maybe this is the Nafkamina between them, is that they are arguing that the principle of whether the woman can use such a tana to get out of repaying the kesef kiddushin, that is the difference between them. And the brace is missing words. This is what it should have said. Someone who gets engaged to a woman, betula gova matayim, v'amana mane. A betula gets 200, and almana gets 100. That's when he backs out of the marriage. Aval meta, if she dies, then makom shenagul achzir makzirim. Makom shenagul shelo achzir in makzirin. So it's the same as we saw in the braisa yesterday, that it's subject to minhag. If she passes away, then it's subject to minhag. And the kesef kedushin being returned will be subject to the minhag makom. But that is unique or only true if she passes away. Aval meitu, if he dies, ein machzirin, then we don't return it. My time, why doesn't, if he passes away, do you not have to return the kesef kiddushin? Because that's what we said at the top of the amud, right? Yecholah hishit amar tnuli bali v'esmachbo, because she can say, listen, there's no ikuv my side. I'm not the one holding up the kiddushin over here. I'm willing to go through with the kiddushin, so therefore the money belongs to me. V'ata Rav Yehuda Nasi l'meimah, Rav Yehuda Nasi comes and says, v'emet amru, ben meitu, ben meitahi. It's irrelevant whether she passes away or he passes away, right? Mekom shenagul achzir machzirin. Mekom shenagul shelo achzir ein machzirin. So the principle or the idea that it's subject to minhag will apply both to whether he passes away or whether she passes away. Velo matzi amra. And he doesn't allow her to make the claim, tnuli bali besmachbo, that he doesn't make her make such a claim that I'm not the ma'akiv, I'm not the one holding up the kiddushin here, I'm not the cause of the inability to complete the Kiddushin, therefore I should keep my case of Kiddushin. So based on this, the Gemara wants to suggest that it's a machlokas between Rabbi Natan and Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, whether the woman can make such a claim of Tunli Bali Vesmachimo. So the Gemara says, lo. You don't have to explain it that way. The Kuli Alma, everybody agrees, Yechola Shetayamayar, she can say, the woman can make the claim, Tunli Bali Vesmachimo. So that's no problem. She can make such a claim and keep the case of Kiddushin. Udmitu, and if the husband passes away, kuli amalo plige. Nobody argues. So if the husband passes away, and she makes such a claim, then it's fine, she can keep the kesef kiddushin. Ki plige, where do they argue, Rabbi Natan, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, shemeitahi, when she passes away? V'acha, b'kiddushin letivu'in, nitnu kamiflige. They're arguing about whether kiddushin are basically given in such a manner to be thrown away, meaning that tavua, to drown, to sink in the water. Once, is kesef kiddushin given in such a manner that there's no expectation it'll be returned? Or are they really given on a quasi tnai that you expect them to be returned if there's no consummation of the marriage? So, Rabbi Natan believes kiddushin, lavli tivuin itnu, believes that when the kiddushin are given, they're not given in a manner in which that there's no expectation of their return. So therefore, they will be returned. Once they're given, they're given. So Gemara says, oh, that's a nice explanation. But the Braisa says, the Braisa says that it's subject to minhag. If you want to suggest this is a machlokas and a fundamental principle in how one views kiddushin, then why should it be subject to minhag makom? It either should be yes, she has to return them, or no, she doesn't have to return them. I mean, obviously it's a case here where she's not, where she's passed away, so it's her family, whether they have to return them or not, return them. So Gemara says, Hachi kama, v'sivlonot. We're going to enter or introduce another piece to the puzzle, which is the sivlonot, v'adai, makom shenagul akzir machzirin. It has to do with sivlonot. Sivlonot are the, according to Rashbam, the tachshitim shesholeach la'arusoto la'acha shekidsha. These are gifts that he sends to his arusa after he has already become engaged to her, after he's already established kiddushin or irisin with her. Right, but they didn't. So it took them a long time to get here, but they finally got here. That the what subject the minhag makom is the sivlonot. V'hanitnai kehanitnai, and this machlokas tanaim is similar to another machlokas tanaim. Titania, we have a brayta. Kidsha b'kikar, if he got married to her with a kikar. Now a kikar is 25 maneh. So that's 2,500 zuz. Right, that's a lot of money. Betula goveh matayim. Ba'amana maneh. So when it comes to, if there's some sort of failure in the marriage, a betula would get 200, which is her ktubah, and the amana would get a maneh. Divrei Rabbi Meir. That's Rabbi Meir's opinion. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, betula goveh matayim v'almana amaneh. So it's like Rabbi Meir, he says he should get their ketubah. Umachzeret lo et ashar, and she has to return the rest of the money. So out of that 2,500, she gets 200 or 100, and the remainder, the 2,300 or 2,400, is returned, because the kiddushin have failed. As opposed to what it sounds like from Rabbi Meir, that she keeps the entire amount, and even above and beyond that, she collects her ketubah. Not only does she keep the Gezer Kiddushin, she also gets her ketubah. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Kitcha Be'esrim, if he was Mekadeshir with 20 Selah, Notna La Shlosha Chatzaim, she gets back. I'm sorry, Shloshim, thank you. Shloshim Chatzaim, she gets back 30 halves. Kitcha Be'shloshim, if she got married with 30, Notain La Esrim Chatzaim, she gets 20 halves back. We'll explain in a second what that means, how Rabbi Yossi works. So my askina, this brisa, what's the case in this brisa? Ilema shemeta, that she dies. So what, you want to suggest that she dies here and she's keeping the case of kiddushin? Then why are we talking about a ketubah at all? A woman who predeceases her husband is not entitled to a ketubah. Ketubah comes when her husband predeceases her. Ela shemeto. So the brisa here must be talking about the case where he died. Amai magzeret lo et ashar. Why does he have to give back, right, why does she have to give back the rest of the kesef kiddushin? He passed away. It's tunuli bali v'esmachbo. Right, v'neim tunuli bali v'esmachbo. So it must be, so that can't be the explanation of the Breita, because we would just establish that everybody agrees that the woman can make such a statement. We said Kuli Alma says that she can say Tnuli Bali Ves Machbo. That means that everybody should agree here that the woman's under no obligation to return the money. And therefore, why does Rabbi Yehuda suggest that you have to give back the money? Ella Be'ishit Yisrael Shezinta. It's a case with a woman who had an extramarital affair. Ubemai. So what's the case that she had an extramarital affair? Ibe Ratzon. If she was willing, a willing participant in the extramarital affair, mi'lo ketuba, then she loses her ketuba. Meaning that the ketuba is only granted to a woman who is in the holy kushura, woman who acts appropriately. We had that in the Mishnayot at the end of ketubot, that a woman who doesn't follow the halacha or doesn't act appropriately, she loses mafsid ketubata, she loses her ketuba. Vela, so what's the case here? That she was bit onus. Right, so there was a case of onus. Mishra Sharia. Like, why did she have to get a divorce? I mean, if that she was nanas, right, if she was against her will, right, she was taken or raped, then there's no restriction against her returning to her husband, and she doesn't lose anything here. So Ve'ela, what's the case here? Be'ishet Kohen. It was a case where it's the wife of a Kohen, Shine'enza, that was raped. The question here is about the Kiddushin, the same machlokas that we just discussed in Rabbi Yehuda Nasi and Rabbi Natan, has to do with whether Kiddushin are basically given away or there's an expectation of them being returned. So Rabbi Meir Savar, so let's explain this brayso. Rabbi Meir believes Kiddushin litivuin itnu, right, that Kiddushin are, when you're giving them away, you don't expect them back. They're gone. So based on that, if they're given away and they're not coming back, then first of all, she keeps the kesef kedushin. But on top of that, when he dies, she's entitled to her ketubah. So she not only gets the kesef kedushin that she keeps, she, in addition to that, she gets her kesef ketubah. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda savar, lav l'tvuyin itnu. Now then, Rabbi Yehuda believes that the kesef kedushin does return because they're not given away in the sense that they're not returning. If the marriage doesn't go through, then the kesef kedushin are expected to come back. Ella, that she gets to keep her ketubah. So from the monies of the kesef kedushin, she'll keep her kesef ketubah. The rest, she'll return. Rabbi Yossi asks, now what is Rabbi Yossi's opinion, which seems very difficult to understand? Rabbi Yossi misvekele. Rabbi Yossi has a doubt. Ili tzvuyim nitnu? Whether they are given away in the sense that you don't expect them back, ilo, or not. So hilkach, therefore, kodshe be'esrim, if you use 20 sela. 20 sela, each sela is 4 dinar, 4 zuz, right? So that makes it 80. He got married with 80. Notin la shloshim chatzaim. Then he gives her 30 halves after that. Why? Because, what is she entitled to? She's entitled to, the case here is a case of an almanah. And she has a ketubah that's here, plus he got married to her. So if he was mekadesh her with esrim, he gave her, used the kikes of kiddushim as the esrim, which was 80 zuz, then what remains from the ketubah over here? What's the remainder that he owes her for the ketubah? Over here he gave kikes of kiddushim, plus he has a ketubah that he has to give to her. So the ketubah is worth 100 zuz. The ketubah is worth 100 zuz. Plus, he now gave her for kesef kiddushin, he was mekadesh her with esrim or 80 zuz. But, out of that 80 zuz, we're not sure. We have a safek. When he gives 80 zuz, does she get to keep it? When she gives 80 zuz, does he get to get it back? So that's a mamon hamutal b'safek. Mamon hamutal b'safek, over here the Gemara is going to say, chokim, like sumchus. This is, Tosos mentions here once again, that for the Rishbam and other Rishonim who think we pass on like Sumchus, this isn't a problem. Tosos here, and he doesn't say it here, but he says, Kamosha Prashti La somewhere else, but Tosos always has to explain, because he thinks we don't pass on like Sumchus, he has to explain why over here the Gemara is saying, Mamon Mutal B'Safek is Chokim. So now we have Mamon Mutal B'Safek, 80 Zuz, she'll keep 40, and she'll give him back 40. So when she gives him back 40, that means now that where he has to give her, right, 100, he has to get her 100. How much does he have to give her in order to make up the difference? He has to give her 60. Right, 60 will make up the difference between them, because he owes her 100 zuz for the ketubah. She is gonna keep 40 and is supposed to return him, 60. Right, 40. Supposed to return him 40. She has 80 zuz. He keeps 40 of it as hers. And 40 of it is his. And he has to get it up to 100 zuz to pay for a ketubah. So now, how much does he owe her? He owes her, right, 30 chatzim. 30 chatzim is 15. 15 slayim is 60 zuz, and that's what he owes her. So he gives her the additional 60 zuz to make her whole over here. Why does he have to give her 60 zuz to make her whole? Because he has 40 which she keeps from the kiddushin, which have nothing to do with the ketubah. That's because we're mamona mutasa fake. 40 zuz she's supposed to return to him. So instead of returning to him, she keeps it as her kesef ketubah. And then to make her whole, to get her to 100 zuz for her kesef ketubah, he has to give her an additional 60 zuz. How do you get to 60 zuz? That's 30 divided in half is 15. 15 times 4 is 60. So he gives her 60 zuz to make her whole. So she'll end up with 140 zuz. Right? And he'll be out 60 zuz to pay for her ketubah. So that's the first case. And in the second case, if he gave her kesef kiddushim of... She gave her shloshim, right? Shloshim slayim. In the case where kitcha b'shloshim by 30, which is 120 zuz, notin la esrin chatzayin. Over there, he has to give her 20 halves. Why? Because if it's a 120, where it's a kesef kedushin, it's mamona mutal b'safek. We split it, so she keeps 60. That's out of the picture. 60 belongs to her. Nothing to talk about. The other 60, he keeps. But he keeps it, but she has it. So he owes her 100 zuz for the ketubah. She already got 60 of it, because 60 of the zuz from the kedushim is his. So he has to add on top of that, he has to get her another 40 zuz. So that's what it means. It gives her 20 chatzayim. 20 and a half is 10. Right? 20 and a half is 10 times 4 is 40. So that's how he makes her whole. So that would be the three opinions over here. That kesef, whether it's nitan l'tvuyin or not nitan l'tvuyin, we do the machlokas over here. We'll have Rabbi Meir saying that it's l'tvuyin. Rabbi Yehuda saying that it's not l'tvuyin. Rabbi Yosef says it's safek. And the machlokas between Rabbi Natan and Rabbi Yehuda Nasi will be the same machlokas. When they discussed minhag in that previous brisa, they were discussing sivlonot. They were discussing gifts that were given after kiddushin. That's subject to minhag ha-makom. But everybody agrees that if he predeceases his wife can say, "Tnuli bali v'esmachpo." The Amar Rav Yosef bar Menuhmi, Amar Rav Nachman, b'chol makom shenagu l'achzir, machzirin. So in any place that the minhag is to give it back, they give it back. That's by kesef kiddushin. But targuma narda. He says that applies. That's the minhag in narda. Shar bavel mai. What's the minhag in the rest of bavel? Rabbi Rav Yosef, darmei tevayu. Moharei hadre kiddushe lo hadre. So when it comes to mohar, mohar is returned. Mohar here, the Rashbam claims is sivlonot. Right, again, these are gifts. They are returned. The minhag is to give it back. But the case of kiddushin, right, is not given back. That's the minhag. The minhag is not to return the kesef kiddushin. Now, the Rashbam over here, when he explains the word moharei, mohar is a term that's used in the Torah, mohara b'tulot, which would be the money, the kesef ha'ketubah. That's what it really sounds like. So that's the Rashbam in his first explanation says mohar equals sivlonot. It's the same thing. And then he says v'nir be'inai. Then he says in my eyes it seems that atrei gadneinu. There are two different types of gifts. There's a gift called moharei, and then there's a gift called sivlonot. We already said by sivlonot, right, further on, the masnisa and the sivlonot, atrei zemnei lamali. Why are we discussing sivlonot over here if the Mishnah is about to explain, later on it's going to explain sivlonot? So v'yesh lomar, he says, the muhar hu min mimamon shemukdim la ata b'mei yisurim shekotei b'ktubata shetezei lo l'hochi mikrei mohar. So mohar is really something which makes sense, because in the Torah, the mohar is something which is part of the ketubah. That's the amount of the kesef ketubah is mohar b'tulot. So the mohar is something that's going to be included in the future in the ketubah. It's basically a down payment or prepayment of the monies that he's going to add into the ketubah. Because in the future, remember from the Mishnayot in Ketubah, in Ketubot, that she can bring monies into marriage, he can make monies into marriage, and they're assessed and they're placed into the Ketubah. So he's giving something that will be written into the Ketubah, but he's giving it to her prior to the Nisuin, prior to the Ketubah. So those are prepayments, but it's called Mohar because it's going to be something that's included in the Ketubah. Whereas sivlonot are gifts that are given at the time of the kiddushin, or after the time of the kiddushin, that are gifts that are part of the kiddushin, that are independent of the ketubah, independent of the nisuin. And so that's what is mentioned of here. Rabbi Rabbi Yosef, Damri Tavayo, Moharei Hadre. When it comes to Moharei, it's clear that that goes back, because that's really prepayments of something that will happen in the ketubah. The ketubah only comes around at the time of the nisuin, and it's clear here that there's going to be no nisuin. If there's no nisuin, then he obviously did not give these gifts with the intent that the nisuin would fail. On the other hand, when it comes to kiddushe, lo hadre. The case of kiddushin doesn't come back because the case of kiddushin we're not necessarily premised on a completion, right, or a consummation of the marriage at nisuin, and that's subject to what we saw before, to subject either to minhag makom, the first we explained, right, in the brisa yesterday, or in today's brisa we explained the case of kiddushin subject to machlokas of whether kiddushin or the tivuyin nitnu or lo kiddushin nitnu.
So the guy gives a
negation
gift,
yeah,
a ring to a wife, to a woman.
Right, so today,
and then they bring up the engagement before the kiddushin and the mirror.
Right.
So who?
Right. So it's right. Today it might be different, which is right. It obviously this gemara will have impact, but today it might be different because today when the ring is given, there's no formal halachic process. In their day, kiddushin was a formal halachic.
The commitment,
that was a halachic commitment. You needed a get to get out of that. So giving a kesef kiddushin is a serious, right, halachic implications in that you have to get afterwards. In that case, maybe you'll say the person gives it without expectation of return because he's formalizing the marriage. On the other hand, by a case of engagement might be premised on there being a completion or a halachic completion of the marriage. It could be that it's the same, that over here it's a question when someone gives such a, right, a ring or some sort of gift, what do they intend for that? Do they intend for that to be returned or not to be returned? And I'm sure it's subject to machlokas. I'm sure that this happens. These are issues that happen when an engagement is broken off. Who broke it off? Right? Was it broken off by the man's side? Was it broken off by the woman's side? Right? Do they have to return the engagement ring? Was the engagement ring given as a gift only as a premise that the marriage would be complete? I'm saying I think that could be. It may be related to this, or it may not. I mean, it could be that it's similar in the mindset, but it also could be not because of the difference whether there are no halachic implications to getting engaged as opposed to actual kiddushin, which has halachic implications. Right.
We don't say that if they get divorced or something, so then they have to return the
excess amount. Yeah, but that's here. That's clear here from the Gemara that when you give kiddushin, if you overpay for the kiddushin, that's all classified as kesef kiddushin. That's not. Nobody disagrees with that. That whatever you give as the kiddushin, even though it's in excess of a pruta, that's all classified as kesef kiddushin. But it does. It could be subjected. I mean, the question that you're asking is what we discussed before. Maybe that whether someone's allowed to break up an engagement once they reach a certain point. I mean, once they reach that point of commitment, even though there's no halachic commitment, as we said before, a curse we discussed where someone has to wear a bisafra, that you have to stand by your word. If one gives a commitment that they're going to get married and then they back out from that commitment, right, does that have implications? We saw the tshuva of Moshe, we've seen other, when we did that sugya, we saw those, that might have also implications about whether she has to return the ring or not. Because who's breaking it? Who's breaking the commitment? And a commitment might be something serious. Now, even though it's not the level of kiddushin that requires a get, it still might be something that's beyond simply a nice or a token type of gift. All right. So now, Amar Papa Yochas of Ben Shemet who? Ben Shemet Tahi. The loch is whether he or she dies, right? Ve'hadar behu, and he, if he backs out, right? Mohare hadre, kiddushe lo hadre. The mohare here, which again, either it could be Moharim, it could be Siblo Not, according to the first explanation of the Rashbam, the one that he likes better is when Moharre are pre-payments of gifts for the Nisuin. So those definitely go back, but the Kesef Kiddushin does not return. Bahadra Bahihi, if she backs out, Afili Kiddushin Nami Hadra, then the Kiddushin go back. So and again, now, so to your question, that would sound like if he backs out, she keeps it. If she backs out, then he gets it back. But again, this is all in Kiddushin. So there is, you have to think about whether that has application outside of your Kiddushin. Alright. Amei Marmar, Kiddushin Lo Hadre, Kiddushin don't go back. Even when it's him, Shema Yomru Kiddushin Tofsim Bachuta. Even though technically, when she backs out, he should get the kesef kiddushin give him. It should go back to him. Nevertheless, we don't do it because we don't want to make it look like the kiddushin was annulled. I mean, there's a difference between whether a kiddushin failed and was annulled, or a question whether they got divorced. If they get divorced, fine, because then everybody knows it was a divorce, and mistakes won't be made afterwards. But if the kesef kiddushin is given back, and they are divorced because there was kiddushin, people will think that they were okir kiddushin meikara, or the kiddushin never went through. And that's why they're giving the kesef kiddushin back. And what will happen then? Because then they'll think, then he can go marry her sister. If he goes and marries her sister, if there was a get to everybody and there was a divorce, the kesef kiddushin won't get back, nobody worries about it. Because they know that he can't marry the sister, even, right, bechaya. As long as she's alive, you can't marry, even if there was a get. But if the kids of Kedushin are bad, people are going to think the Kedushin failed. The Kedushin failed, then he could marry your sister. There was never any Kedushin. So if you give back the kids of Kedushin, people are going to think that the Kedushin was annulled, and they'll think he can marry her sister, which is obviously not the case. So Vashi Omar, Gita Mokhiach Aleh. What do you have to worry about? Even when he gives back the Ges of Kedushin, there's still a get over here. So the get would be Mokhiach. Vahad Ravashi, Bedutahi. So Ravashi's explanation is, you know, either a test or a joke. Why? Deika Deishama Bahav Lo Shavla. Because there's some people hear about the return of the Ges of Kedushin, but don't hear about the get. They're two separate items. So you don't want a mistake could still arise from the fact that there is one, there's a get and there's Ges of Kedushin. They're two separate things. So a person may not have heard about the get, but saw the money being given back and might think that his Kedushin would be Tofsin Ba'achota if he marries his sister afterwards. Rabbanan. Chamisha Dvarim Nemru B'Shush Binut. So this is our Mishnah. We talked about Shush Binut, which again loosely we translated as best man, but that the parties do each other a favor. One comes to the wedding, they attend the wedding, and they bring monies and gifts to help him be Mesameach, the Chatan. And that favor is returned when the other party gets married. So it's something that's something. Number one is Nigveit B'Beitin. It's a full-fledged obligation. If one party performed, if Reuven did it for Shimon, Shimon must do it back for Reuven. And if he doesn't do it, you can go to Beis Din and collect on it. Right? V'chuzeret ba'onata. Number two is it returned when you get married. The obligation is not to return the monies, but rather only return when the similar situation arises. So if Reuven was at Shimon's wedding, then when Reuven gets married, Shimon will return it, but not before then. He doesn't have to pay any monies before then. Ve'im ba'mishum ribit. If they do not give equally, I mean, if the shush binin do not give the exact same amount, we don't assume that it's ribit. We don't assume that when Shimon got married and Reuven gave him a gift, then when Shimon comes back and gives him more money, his gift is bigger than Reuven's gift was to him. We don't say, oh, it's because Reuven lent him money, therefore Shimon's paying it back with ribit. Ve'in ha-shvi'it mishamta. The shvi'it does not wipe it out. I mean, that if it crosses over the shvi'it, this obligation is not erased like other loans. Vein b'chor notel ba pishtaim, and a b'chor doesn't take two parts in it. So the Gemara is going to go through each one of these. Nigveit be'beis din. Why can it be collected in beis din? My taima kemilva damya. It's like a loan. It's similar to a loan. It isn't a loan, but it's kemilva. It's like a loan, so therefore it becomes an obligation because the underlying premise in giving the sigla notes originally was that you were going to give it back. You were going to do the same back for him. It's almost like there's a tanai embedded in the gift. There's almost, even though he's not stating it explicitly, the circumstances and the context dictate that that is the case, that you are going to pay back the amount. Ein ba mishum ribit, there is no ribit here. Delava daita dehochi yavle. He doesn't give it to him, or he doesn't give it to him with the understanding that he's going to get the exact same amount back. I mean, that since by shush binut, there is no minimum, and there is no fixed amount that you give, therefore, there's no expectation of what you're going to give back. The keren itself is not fixed. Because if you say that there's ribit, you have to have a principal, and then he's paying you in excess of the principal. Says the way the Rashbam, right, explains over here, El mitoch she machmat, or right, simchat re'ut, hirbe abedaron, that because of the love and friendship, he's giving him a larger gift. What does that mean, he's giving him a larger gift? When he gives him a larger gift, it means that we're not sure what the principle is. Because if the principle was never defined beforehand, because when you gave the original gift, you were not obligated back to pay back that fixed amount, or you could pay back whatever you want, or something that makes him happy. Therefore, we don't know what the original principle is, or what you're paying, what if it is principal and interest. So you can't call it interest unless you know there's a principal. And over here, there's no principle because the amount you have to return is not fixed. The amount you return is not fixed, then everything you're giving back is principal, and therefore there is no interest over here. Ve'ein shvi'id mishamta. The shvi'id doesn't wipe it out. Dulo kirinan be lo yigos. Because we don't call it that lo yigos. What does it mean lo yigos? A loan is only subject to be wiped out in the shvi'id where you go and collect, that you can go and collect that loan. Why is it? Why is it not that case? So now as machlokas tosos brings down.
If he doesn't get married in 20 years.
Very good. So that's the question. Is this the same or similar to a case? The Gemara has a case, for instance, where if you lend out money for 10 years, and you're not allowed to collect it before 10 years. So is that subject to Shvi'it or not subject to Shvi'it? The Shvi'it Mishametet or not Mishametet? Why? Because when you cross, at the time of Shvi'it, can you collect on that loan?
No,
because it's a subject to a 10-year period or duration, and only, you can only come collect at the end of the 10 years. So therefore, on Shvi'it, it's lo yigos. So from this, There are those that want to explain, and the Rabbeinu Tam, others want to explain that the Shvi'it is not Mishametet over here, because lo igos, like David just suggested, the obligation to repay only happens when he gets married. So if he gets married after Shvi'it, there was no obligation at the time of Shvi'it, the obligation only came in.
Never go right. And demand the money.
Right. You have no demand on him, you have no rights to demand it, both in the 10-year loan and over here, and therefore, both of them are not subject to Shvi'it, and will paskin in Shvi'it over by the loan, the 10-year loan, similar to over here. That it's not subject to Shvi'it, and it will not be wiped out. It's funny over here, you should read it inside, I won't read it inside now, but the Tosas, based on this explanation, has a problem with one of the piyutim. So they go ahead and they change the lashon of piyut in order to match up with the halacha over here. It's just interesting from a historical perspective, and also the way that they were machshiv the piyutim, that they were written by people who had knowledge and they had, you know, meaning halachic implications in that sense, that they're willing to edit or change the lashon of piyut in order to match up with the, make sure that the halacha lines up with the piyut. So that's the explanation of the Rabbeinu Tam and the way that David explained it. The Rebbe comes along and says, no, what do you mean? It doesn't have to be. You could separate the two items. It might be here that the shushbinut is totally separate from a milveh. And that is because shushbinut and milveh are not the same thing. Right? They're different. Because of the point, it's David, I think you said this originally, but that there's a possibility that you'll never collect the loan. As opposed to a loan that is due in 10 years, it's for certain that you will at some point make a claim against him and you will ask him for the money. I mean that even if you pass away, even if the creditor passes away, his children can come and make the claim on his behalf. The loan does not dissipate if the creditor passes away. On the other hand, by these siblanot, if the shushbin who gave the money originally passes away, it'll never be paid back. So there is a possibility. Right, never gets married. So there is a possibility that the loan will never be claimed at all, whatsoever. So the Rebbe suggests that a loan for 10 years is different than shushbinut. A loan for 10 years will at some point come to a point of egos, and therefore it's subject to shvi'it. On the other hand, a shushbinut might never ever reach the point of egos. If that's the case, it will not be subject to shvi'it, because then the obligation and the egos only happens at the moment of the marriage. When the second party gets married and he has to return the shvi'it. Right, at that point, all the obligations start then, but not before then, and that there's no certainty that he will have to pay, or that he will have an obligation, as opposed to a 10-year loan where there's a certainty he will have to pay, it's just delayed to a later point in time. Right, the next, Ein Bechor Notel Beroi Kemuchzak, that we said originally, which is that the Bechor is not Notel Pishnayim, Davali Ra'ui, because it's not considered to be always collected already, it's only something that will be collected in the future. And we said, a Bechor is not Notel Beroi Kemuchzak, that we already explained by the Mishnah, by Yabam, because Yabam has the same din as a Bechor, and therefore the Shushbinut is not an obligation, will fall to the entire state, not to the individual himself. So Amar Rav Kahana, Klala de Shushbinita, these are the rules of shushbinita. This is the etiquette or the proper conduct when it comes to being a shushbin, which is haba b'mato. If he's in the city when his friend gets married, ibayla lemeto, he should have been there. Meaning that the obligation to return the favor of shushbinut applies when you're in the same city. If you're in the city, then you should be at the wedding. You should be attending the wedding because he was at yours. You should be at his. Shama kal tavla, if he heard the announcement. So the Kal Tavla here is some sort of either a clapper or a bell, where they used to go around and say, come be Mesamech Techatan. So he knows about the news, then he baila the metta. He should be at the wedding, should be in attendance. If either because he's in the city or because he heard the announcement, he should be there.
So that is
Lo Shama Kal Tavla. If he would not be, meaning that he's not in proximity to the wedding where he would hear the announcement, or he'd know about it, then he baila the odie. Then the one getting married has to tell him, has to give him the information, has to send him an invitation. I mean, you can't expect the individual to know that his friend is getting married, now he has to show up to be a shushbin, unless it's so obvious. Either he's living nearby, or that he's gonna be there, he hears the announcement. If he's so far away, or he's in a place where he's not gonna hear the announcement, in shul, like he doesn't come to the same shul, doesn't hear the announcement on Shabbos, then he's got to, right, inform him. How do you inform him? You send him an invitation. You have to ensure that he knows that you're having a wedding, and that you have to show up for it. So now, if he doesn't send him that information, then Taromo Title, right? You can complain that he didn't show up, right? So he should have told him. If he loy duyli, if he didn't tell him, then he just has a complaint against him. Now shulamim mishalim, if he doesn't show up, and we said before that beis din can come and nigvate, they can collect from it. Bad kama, how much? How much do you collect over here? What's the question? The question is that he didn't actually show up. So if he didn't show up, had he shown up, he would have eaten. It would have cost you money. We send out an invitation to someone, and they come to the wedding, it actually costs you money if they show up to the wedding. So now, even if he's a shushabin and he owes him money, he's supposed to give him gifts. But he also saved him some money. By not showing up to the wedding, he saved him some money because he has to pay for his food. So what type of deduction does he get for when he comes to give the gifts? Right, so if they used to be knowing that up to a zuz, that a person normally, or they knew that a person adzuza, a person's aite bekape and achle bekarse, a person takes with his hands and he eats and fills his belly with a zuz worth. Therefore, ad arba mishalim palgo, until up to four zuz. If he's up to four zuz, he pays half. He pays half worth. Whatever he's going to eat, he pays a half worth of that for shushbinut. The other half he deducts for food, because we assume that because he's a big gun at the wedding, he's the one bringing the shushbin, he's the best man, they're going to feed him generously. They're not going to give him like a regular zuz, they'll give him up to two zuz worth of food. It's reasonable to assume that they would give him. And then for his gift, it's up to four zuz, we're going to say he gets half. Half of it he'll pay, the other half he gets to deduct, because he would have gotten that in food-wise. And they save the money of paying him food. On the other hand, mikan ve'elech, above four zuz, then chashuvute. It depends on how big the gift is. Right, because the bigger the gift that he gives, the more they're going to treat him when he shows up. They'll give him more desserts, they'll give him more expensive food. I mean, that, again, the more you pay, the better the treatment at the wedding. So therefore, if he was going to give a larger gift, then we assume that he would have gotten more food and his deduction is bigger. If he's going to give a smaller gift, then the deduction is lower, but it's in relationship to the size of the gift will be the deduction for the food. Tarabanan, asayim obupumbi. So he did it with him publicly. I mean, since it's Reuven got married, and Shimon was there celebrating publicly, dancing in front of him. Then Shimon gets married, and Shimon says, listen, you know, I want you to come back and just do it quietly. We'll just have a lot of little celebration. No, I'll only come back and celebrate with you publicly, just like you did for me publicly. I want to return the favor and be sameach with you publicly. Because then he won't be obligated to do it. He says, I only have to do it. The shushbinut is such a quid pro quo or such a equivalence in the process that if he says to them, listen, I want to do it b'tzinah, he says, I'm not going to return the shushbinut now. I will only do the shushbinut the way you did it for me. You did it for me publicly, I'll return it to you publicly, and that's it. Because I want to be mesameach chatan like you were mesameach chatan. And as we said before, it's a question whether this is his statement or the beginning of Gershom is explaining this. He says, the b'tzniut lo bi simcha klum. That in a quiet or private area, that's not called simcha. Simcha is something that's done with many around, not one between two people there. You have to have a group of people in order to be simcha. Actually, has an afgamina lalocha, the Mishnah Berurah brings this down by Purim. And when it comes to sudat purim, a person's not allowed to have sudat purim by themselves, because that's not considered simcha. Simcha of sudat purim requires others to be there in order to be a simcha. The same thing over here. He's saying, listen, you were misameach me as the chatan. I'm returning the favor. I want to be misameach you as a chatan. And you claiming that I should do it privately, I don't accept that. I want to be misameach you like you were to me. I want to return it properly. So that would be the case. He can demand that. He can say, I can do that. Asei mi bi bitula. So he says to him, listen, I do. Asei mo bi bitula. He said he got married to a bitula. Ubekej lasov imo ba'almana. And the second party, so when Reuven got married, Shimon came and celebrated, Reuven was marrying a betula. Then Shimon gets married to an almana. He says, Yechol omar lo betula yaseimcha keder shasita imi. I'll only return the favor if your wedding is the same as my wedding. My wedding was to betula, so when your wedding's to betula, I'll show up. Right now, your wedding's to an almana, I'm not obligated to show up and repay you and do your shushbinut here. Shushbinut is, again, this idea that there's an equivalence, it has to be the same circumstances that I celebrated for you, you're going to celebrate for me.
Right. Well, no. He says no. Not at all.
I'll see here now. He did it with him. It was his second wife. And now he wants to have the favor returned by the first wife. When you marry your second wife, I'll show up. So when Shimon celebrated Reuben's second wife, and then Shimon gets married to his first wife, Reuben can say, listen, when you get your second wife, I'll do it for you. Right? You came at my second wedding. I'll show up at your second wedding also. So again, this equivalence. Aseimo b'achat. So he got married to one wife. Beish lasotimo b'shtayim. And he wants to return the favor with two. Yechol omar lo b'achat aseimcha, k'derech shasita imi. Right, he says, I'll do it for one wife, not two. So here the subject of Machlokas, how to explain this. Tosa says, the difficulty is, listen, I will pay you back with two women. Listen, when you have two wives, I'll pay you my shush binut. I'll give you half in this wedding and half in that wedding. Each one, I'll give you half in each wedding. So he can say, listen, I want to do to you like you did to me. I want it to all to be paid at one wedding. I don't want to have to show up at two weddings. I don't want to have to do two parts and two parties, and have, even though it's the same cost, I don't have to be there twice. So you were at one of my weddings. I'm going to pay you back. And what do you pick your wedding? I'll be at the wedding. But I'm not going to be there at two weddings. So that's the way Tosis explains it. That fits into our gears over here. That he's a lasotimo. He says, listen, you want, I'll do with you in one, right, like you did with me. The Rabbi Yitzchak Mordechai changed the gears to read aseimo b'shush binut b'shtei nashim b'kesh aseimo b'isha achat. That it's the other way around, like subject to the other ones before. The cases where he says, listen, you did a shush binut for two marriages of mine, and I want to pay you back, you should pay me back now in one wedding. The chatan says, listen, I'm going to get married now. You pay me back for those two shush binuts, you'll pay me back now at one wedding. I say, no, I don't have to pay. I'll pay you back. You, when you marry your second wife, I'll pay you the other half of the shush binut. I'm not going to give you all the money that I owe you at one wedding. Because you did it for me at two weddings. I'm going to give you half now at this wedding, and I'll give you the other half when you get married to your second wife. So the same, because then it follows the flow of the Gemara. The Tosfos gave a good explanation of how it could follow the flow of the Gemara. Right now, Tan Rabbanan, Atir Nichsin, Atir Pumbi. So a person who is wealthy with possessions, or publicly wealthy, Zeu Bal Hagadot. So what does that mean, Atir Nichsin and Atir Pumbi? Atir Pumbi is somebody whose wealth is well known. How is his wealth well known? Because he owns vineyards and he owns orchards, things that everybody knows about because they're out in the open. Or he owns lots of animals, he has large flocks, something that is not hidden from the public, something that is well known. So someone who's Atir Ben Yichsin and it's a public type of wealth, that is a description of Bal Agadot. This is someone who can be Doresh, the Agadot, he can be Doresh Psukim. That is someone who is, why is he compared to that? Because he's someone who can darshan everywhere. Because he can come to a party and he can give a drasha. He can come to a Yom Tov and a Shabbos, he can give a drasha. Anywhere he is, anytime, he can give any, it doesn't require a lot of iyun. It's a lighter form of drasha. It's a nice thought about a pasuk. It's a something that people take to heart, but it's not something that requires pilpul and discussion and depth of looking. Therefore, it's everywhere. So that's the same thing. Someone who's wealthy, but like publicly wealthy, means that everybody knows about it. That's a bal agada. Can go around to everywhere and to every person, give them a drasha, give them a thought in Torah. And next is atir slaim, atir tekoa. Zeu bal pilpul. So Atir Slaim sounds like he is wealthy with money, meaning that he's like a money changer and he makes his money through exchanging money. Or Atir Tekoa could be two of things. Some people say that it means lots of houses, that he's a real estate mogul in that way, that he owns lots of houses. Others say Tekoa is from what we had in the Mishnah Menachot, that Tekoa Alpha the Mishcha, or the Zeta, that Tekoa was the best place for olive oil. They used to bring the olive oil from the menorah from Tekoa. And it's well known even till today, it's well known for its olives and its olive oil. And therefore, he was wealthy from olive oil, from oil. He trafficked in olive oil. So those two things, a person who is through money changing or oil, that person is a Zeu Bal Pilpul. This is someone who every day is working. Every day is toiling in Torah and coming up with ideas and new things. He's really working in Torah. Just like over here, a money changer makes money because he goes out every single day and he changes money that he goes to work. Same thing with a Baal Mishkav of the oil. If he's selling oil, if he's making oil, then he'll be making money. If he's not, then he won't make it. But he can do it daily and on again. It's not something that's subject to seasonal right trends. It's something that he could do day in and day out. And therefore, he's a Baal Pilpul. Atir Mashach, Atir Kamas, Zel Baal Shmot. Someone who is wealthy from Mashach over here means, or Mashiach, is Anshe Midot, right? Something that is wealthy with something that is measured, like tvua, like grains, some sort of thing that is harvested on a regular basis. Or the other possibility was Atir Kamas, something that is Kamus. Kamus is something that's gathered in, right? Or brought together in piles. That type of wealth is something that happens only once a year. I mean, that you plant, but the collection or the harvest only happens once, or you put it into your storage and then you sell it. So you only realize profits, you only realize the wealth once a year or once every period of time when it comes around. It's not like you daily, day to day. So who's that? That someone is Baal Shmuot. That is someone who knows halachot, memrot, amoraim. And therefore, when he has a time to paskin, he has all the information, but so when somebody needs a psak halacha, he can come forward and give the psak halacha because he knows he has the information, but he's not using it every day. He uses it when people come to him and ask him a question, then he's ready to, ready comes forth with the issue. And then the Gemara says, Akol tzrichim the marei chitaya. So when it comes to the marei, because everybody needs the marei chitaya, everybody needs the one who has the information. When you gather together information, everybody needs information because at some point everybody needs the information that you have. Then on the other hand, Gemara, when it comes to Gemara, Gemara means Sugyota Gemara. It's like our Gemara, which it explains the Mishnayot and the Braitot, which is the Iker Gemara over here, which helps to explain and give over the true understanding of the Mishnayot. So Amar Rabbi Zeira, Amar Rav. What does it mean that the pasuk says Kol Yemei Ani Ra'im? All the days of the poor person are miserable, right? Ze Baal Gemara, right? This is someone who is a Baal Gemara because he's always having to toil and figure out and try to reconcile the Mishnayot, the Braitot. It's very difficult. It's always difficult. Whereas Tov Lev Mishte Tamid, someone who is happy and is always, right, always celebrating in a sense, that is a Baal Mishnah. That's someone who knows the Mishnayot. Mishnayot meaning that he knows all the Mishnayot, but he doesn't know how to answer them up. He doesn't know how to reconcile between them, but he knows the information. So he has a large body of information, but he doesn't know what to do with them. So he's always happy. He knows what he knows, but he can't do anything with it. He can't try to reconcile between them. Rava Amar Ipcha, Rava says it's the other way around. I know Dabra Mishnah, what do you mean the other way around? The other way around is that the one, the Mishnayot person is always in trouble because he can never answer up. He has all this information, but he doesn't know how to reconcile them, so he's always in difficulty or upset. Whereas the Baal Gemara has a way to reconcile, he has a way to solve the problems. And that's why he's Tov Lishtem, Tov Lev, right, is a Mishnah Tamid, is that he's always happy because he always has a way to reconcile over here. Right, a person who puts up, who brings rocks and stones, them will be upset by them. Right? And the other one who chops wood, he will be supported by them. He will be held up by them. Those are the Baalei Mishnah. They have the rocks. They have the big rocks. They know how to carry around rocks from place to place. And they have the information. But they can't do anything with it. They will be sad because they don't know what to do. Those that chop wood, they can use them to heat themselves later on. They can burn them as fire and use them as heat. Then Elu Baalei Gemara, because they have a way to reconcile. They have a way to come to a conclusion. Because they're able to solve the they're able to come to a psak halacha, they're able to reconcile Mishnayot, they're able to deal with all the information that they have. Right? This is somewhat like the Gemara at the end of Brachot, it's Machlokas over there by Rabban Rav Yosef, Sinai v'Oker Harim. Sinai, someone who has lots of information, and Oker Harim, something that someone who has pilpul, which is better. So there the Gemara says that Sinai Adif, that the one who has information is more important. Why? Because of Kol Tzrichin and the Mari Chitaya. Everybody needs the information in the end. Even the Sinai, even the one who's Oker Hari, even the one who's Mempalpel and is going through this and needs it, needs the information. He needs the Mishnayot, he needs the Gemarot in order to answer them. He can't reconcile if he doesn't have them. So therefore he needs them. So that was definitely time in the truth of the Gemara where it was Torah Shebaal Peh. Today that might have changed a little bit today because of the fact that everything is printed today. The fact that everything is printed today means that the information is readily available, and the idea of a Sinai is not as important. Now Sinai with an Okir Harim together, being an Okir Harim, when you're a Sinai, that might be much more powerful, but a Sinai by itself today may not be as valuable as it was in the time of the Gemara. Rabbi Chanina Amar, Ko Yimei Ani Ra'im. All the days of an Ani Ra'im, Zeh She'esh Lo Isha Ra. This is someone who has a miserable wife. Tov Lev Mishteh Tamid, right? So that's, what's a Tov Lev? He's always enjoying Zeh She'esh Lo Isha Tova. Someone who has a wonderful wife, and he's always happy. Rabbi Yana Amar, Ko Yimei Ani Ra'im, Zeh Istinis. This is someone who is very particular, someone that is, right, is very particular or gets upset very easily. Someone who can deal. He can deal with different items, different places. He doesn't get disgusted by things easily. So the person who gets disgusted easily is always going to be in a state of, I can't handle it. The person who is much more relaxed about it, he won't have a problem. The days of an ani are poor. This is someone, it's a very surprising statement. Zerachman, this is someone who has mercy. So that's the, if you look in the last line in the Rajbam, it's a kamein yanim who ro'eh, for kamein ro'ot shlibo pucheta yivir lim. He's affected emotionally by so many things, he's always upset. Right? Whereas, so lemishta tamid zachzari, someone who is less sympathetic. Someone who's less sympathetic is happy because they're not caught up in the emotional side of it. It's very interesting. It's different than the other explanations we're seeing here. Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi Amar, Ko Yimei Ani Ra'im Zeshadato Kitzara. That is someone who's right, can't handle things, that he's unable to take on so much. So lemishta tamid zeshadato ruchava. He's able to handle a lot more. He has a, you know, open mind. He's able to take on more pressure or more issues. Right, how could that be? How could you quote all this case of Rabbi Shimon Levi? What about Shabbos and Yom Tovim? I mean, that even though they're ani, how can you say all his days are bad? At least in Shabbos and Yom Tov, he gets extra food, he has what to celebrate, then it's dope. It's like Shmuel, Damar Shmuel, Shuni Veset Chilat Choli. When a person changes from their normal schedule, their normal pattern, it makes them sick. So here the ani, thinking that he's going to have a great meal, it's a wonderful thing on Shabbos, but because he changes from his normal custom of eating, it's going to actually make him sick. So therefore, Ko Yimei Ani Ra'im. In B'Sefer Ben Sirah, it's interesting here, the Gemara's quoting it, it's explicitly quoted here in the Gemara. So then the Gemara quotes Sefer Ben Sirah, and you see on the side, the Masor Sashat says it's from Sefer Ben Sirah, that they quote something of Memra. But over here, it's explicit. The Gemara says, Sefer in B'Sefer Ben Sirah, it says, Ko Yimei Ani Ra'im. Ben Sirah Omer, meaning Ko Yimei Ani Ra'im, is like what we just suggested over here, the explanation of the Gemara. Ben Sirah adds on, Af Leilot. Meaning that Ko Yimei means all the days, but the assumption of all your days from the Pasuk is that at night he's happy because he's asleep. How bad could it be when he's sleeping? So then Ben Sira says, even at nights it's bad for him. Why? B'shafel gagim gago, mematar, gagim le gago. So because he lives at the bottom of the city, he lives at the lowest point in the city, and his roof is the lowest roof, therefore, mematar gagim le gago, all the other roofs pour their water onto his roofs. Everything drains onto his roof. So even when it rains, it's all falling in. Berom harim karmo. And where does he have to plant? Where is his field? At the top of the mountain. He has the worst location for his field. Therefore, marfar karmo le kramim. Therefore, when the rain comes and the wind comes, when he fertilizes his fields, does the field, it all rolls downhill to the parties below. So here he has the worst house because he's at the bottom, and all the water runs down onto his house, or into, you know, his roof. And therefore, he's going to be the one with the leak or with all the water sitting on his roof. It's into his field. He has the highest field because that's the place that nobody wants to plant. And therefore, all his stuff's going to roll downhill. So that's what he says. Ko Yimei Ani Ra'im is from the Pasuk, and Ben Sirah says even at nights it's bad for him, because when it rains and when the winds come and everything happens, it's going to ruin his house and his field, so it's going to be bad 24 hours a day. It's going to be bad for him. All right, we'll stop over here.